Dem Bash. I'm Sarah Glynn for Media News, and this is my weekly news review for Saturday, the 10th of September. The Power of Hate. 67 years ago last Tuesday, Istanbul's Greek community found themselves confronted by violent and angry mobs after news spread that Greeks had bombed the Turkish consulate in Thessaloniki, damaging the adjacent birthplace of Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. That night, over 30 people are thought to have been killed, with many more brutally injured. Rioters attacked Greek homes, businesses, and religious buildings, and also, for good measure, those of Armenians and Jews. It was a planned pogrom and is part of a long history of attacks on Turkey's Greek minority that goes back to the beginning of the Republic. The bomb was planted by a Turkish agent. A sensationalised account of the bombing was spread through a government-supporting newspaper, which organised large-scale printing and circulation. Thousands of rioters were brought into Istanbul from other areas and provided with tools to carry out their destruction, and the police stood by while they attacked. The politics of hate is a favourite tactic of despotic rule, and although this has long been recognised, it is put into play again and again. It turns humanity's positive craving for community into a negative antipathy to outsiders in order to make people unaware of their own exploitation and to fragment potential opposition to those in power. In compensation, people are given false pride and a scapegoat on whom to blame their troubles. The Turkish state is based on ethnic nationalism, and Turkish governments of all parties have always promoted prejudice against minorities. However, they are far from alone in encouraging hate. The British Empire has a long track record of prejudice, and it is also claimed that, before the Istanbul pogrom, the British government deliberately encouraged Turkey in its anti-Greek sentiments in order to counter Greek plans for a UN-sponsored referendum on the future of Cyprus, which the British wanted to keep under their own control. Then, as now, the Turkish people were suffering from economic failure, so the pogrom also served to enable popular anger to find an outlet. Parallels with current political scenarios even include an American response that attempted, for the sake of relations with strategically placed Turkey, to equate victims and perpetrators, with almost identical letters being sent to the prime ministers in Athens and in Ankara. Today's Turkish government is again trying to bolster its popular support by uniting an economically battered population against Greece. Not so much the Greeks in Turkey, where the Greek population is now reduced to just a few thousand, but Greece itself. Turkey has never been reconciled to losing control over the Greek islands in the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, agreed in the 1923 Treaty of Lausanne. There are complicated legal arguments about the interpretation of this and subsequent treaties, but more significant is a sense of historic right. Claiming historic rights in this way raises questions about why one historic moment should be privileged over another. Go back further, and this was all Byzantium, and they opened the door for endless wars. The value of the islands is hugely enhanced by the access they give to the surrounding waters and the mineral wealth beneath. Recent years have seen alarming tensions and standoffs between Turkey and Greece over rights to explore for gas in the eastern Mediterranean, and there have been numerous claims and counterclaims about infringement of airspace. In addition, the Turkish government is angry that Greece has been lobbying the United States not to sell F-16 fighter jets to Turkey. President Erdogan has taken his bellicose rhetoric towards Greece to a new level. Speaking at an air show last Saturday, he threatened that if Greece did not remove all military from the islands, we may come down suddenly one night. This phrase, which he repeated later that day, is the same that he has used many times to threaten an imminent invasion of northern Syria, and that he used in 2017 to threaten the Kurdistan region of Iraq when they held a referendum on independence. Nazlan Ertan recalls in El Monitor that the phrase originated in a love poem, but was then used to refer to Turkey's intervention into Cyprus in 1974. Erdogan also told the Greeks, "Don't forget Izmir." The recapture of Izmir, Smyrna in Greek, sealed Turkey's victory in the 1919-1922 Greco-Turkish War. But of all the atrocities committed in the war, the worst was the burning of that city, which followed 4 days later. The population was then half Greek, and Turkish troops torched the Greek and Armenian quarters, causing the deaths of tens of thousands of people. Tens of thousands more were deported to labor camps and probable death, and most of the rest of the Greek and Armenian population were evacuated as refugees. While Erdogan's statements are clearly designed to appeal to a domestic audience and win back his leeching support, the European Union spokesperson commented that, quote, "The continuous hostile remarks by the political leadership of Turkey against Greece and the Greek people raise serious concerns," end quote. Kurds, who make up a fifth to a quarter of Turkey's population, are treated to a different sort of hate. As Muslims, they are not officially recognised as a minority at all, but rather as inferior Turks who must be forced to accept their Turkishness. Not that this has prevented the most primitive forms of anti-Kurdish racism. Abuse of Turkey's Kurdish citizens is endemic and is led from the top. As in other structurally racist societies, Turkish racism is reinforced by the justice system. Any promotion of Kurdish rights is criminalised. Large and growing numbers of Kurds are political prisoners, and treatment of Kurdish political prisoners is getting increasingly harsh. Shirin Keskin, imprisoned in Samsun Bafra, told his father, quote, "We experience psychological repression and violations of rights every moment. But that's not all. There are cell raids, physical abuse, and forced transfers. The guards confiscate our books, letters, notebooks, pens, daily notes, diaries, and radios. An investigation has been opened against 20 prisoners on the basis of false facts. The prison management wants to prevent us from having visitors and receiving medical treatment. On the way to the visiting cells and to the hospital, we're subjected to degrading treatment every time." End quote. Rochad Bat, imprisoned like many Kurdish activists for membership in a terrorist organisation, was supposed to be released on August the 26th. He explains that he was denied release, quote, "on the grounds that I had participated in activities that actually posed no problem for the prison administration. These activities generally included borrowing books from the library, participating in sports and social, cultural and artistic activities, and getting certificates from workshops," end quote. Earlier, Bat had reported to his sister that a chief prison guard had told him, "You will die here. I will kill you. You will not get out of here alive." 83-year-old Mehmet Emet Özkan, who's been in prison for 27 years and suffers from multiple serious conditions, has again been taken to hospital. Although hospital reports have repeatedly called for his release, this has been denied. He cannot look after himself and is being cared for by his son, who was held in the same prison, and a cellmate. Özkan was convicted on the basis of witnesses who have since recanted their testimony, and it is believed that the murder for which he has been punished was carried out by the secret state. Seriously ill 80-year-old Makbule Erza has been allowed out of prison, as she cannot meet her own needs on her own, but only after widespread protests. Earlier, it was reported that the official doctor who examined her could not communicate with her as no Kurdish interpreter was provided. Gökhan Yildirim, who has been on hunger strike to demand a fair trial, was finally let out of prison on Tuesday, but only after 256 days without food had put his health seriously at risk, and other prisoners remain on hunger strike for their rights. On Saturday, it was reported that another prisoner had died in suspicious circumstances. Angin Gürçüm, aged 35, had rope marks around his neck. His family was told they must take the body directly to their home village for burial and not pass through the centre of Dersim, as that would be considered propaganda, and the village headman was forbidden from attending the funeral. Meanwhile, the Istanbul justice vigil by prisoners' families was again attacked by police, and demonstrators and journalists were beaten and detained. Last week's arrest of People's Democratic Party, HDP, deputy Semra Güzel, whose parliamentary immunity was lifted in March, was not only deeply worrying for being yet another example of the criminalisation of Kurdish politics and the denial of democracy. Turkey's Human Rights Association has filed a complaint over the manner of her arrest and the widely shared video that showed the police attempting to humiliate her by handcuffing her and pulling her hair to try and force her to bow her head. Their complaint states, quote, "The dissemination of these images, which contain numerous criminal offences, also constitutes an offence of incitement to hatred and hostility," end quote. And they comment, quote, "The publication of such images seeks to normalise acts of torture and ill treatment and provides impunity for the officials who committed the crime. It is well known that the driving factor behind the continuation of gross human rights abuses is impunity. The perpetrators can be confident that they will not be brought to justice and punished," end quote. While many hopes are being pinned on the Turkish elections, which must take place by next June, all the parties, other than the HDP and the small left parties, compete in playing the racist populist card. The Kurds have been attacked under every Turkish government, and today these racist parties also boast of the hard line they will take against Syrian refugees. The principal beneficiary from the drop in support for the ruling Justice and Development Party, the AKP, has been the right-wing nationalist E Party, which is running third in terms of popular support and is part of the main opposition alliance, in which the biggest party is the Republican People's Party, the CHP. This week, E Party leader Meral Akşener announced an action plan that would strip Syrian refugees of their benefits and even deny them access to parks and beaches. Akşener claimed that Turkey has become an immigrant warehouse and nearly a garbage dump for immigrant-averse Europe, and she promised that by September 2026, all Syrians would be returned to Syria. Also in her plan, illegal immigrants would be put in concentration camps before being sent back. Such rhetoric fuels increasingly violent anti-Syrian racism. Last Monday, Faris Mohammed Al-Ali, a 17-year-old Syrian refugee who had just secured a place at medical school, was stabbed to death on the street in Antakya. Members of the main opposition CHP have been equally harsh, notably the mayor of Bolu. Istanbul's mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu, has responded to the interior minister's politically inspired claims that the municipality is employing terror suspects, not by defending their workers, but by sacking them. Fired workers have now been protesting for 6 weeks and have been meeting with human rights organisations, lawyers and trade unions. A newly sacked worker, Dumash Savaş, has explained that he was sacked from his cleaning job on the basis of a 1997 lawsuit that, despite hours of torture and 9 months remand in prison, was never brought to prosecution. He also recalls how he and others spent days and nights guarding the ballot boxes to ensure that İmamoğlu was not cheated of his election win. In response to a suggestion by the CHP's Gürsel Takin that the HDP could be given ministries in a future government, E-Party leader Akşener has made clear her antagonism towards any form of association with the HDP. Cutting across the more conciliatory approach championed by CHP leader Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu and making it difficult for HDP supporters to have any faith in the main opposition alliance, much to the delight of the ruling AKP. None of the mainstream opposition parties have dared to criticise Turkey's invasions and ongoing attacks in Syria, which are mainly targeted at ending any form of Kurdish autonomy, as well as at Turkish aggrandisement. The Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, have released a long list of attacks carried out by Turkey in August, all despite the 2019 ceasefires. Turkish attacks into the Kurdistan region of Iraq have also been carried out by different governments, though not generally with the ferociousness with which they are being pursued today. While these attacks are ostensibly aimed at destroying the PKK's bases, Turkey has taken the opportunity to establish an extensive military network. Kurdistan Watch claims that Turkey now has 53 outposts and bases and 35 small observation points, and that the list includes 9 large military bases, four of them built this year. This huge military presence and the constant attacks restrict the PKK's room for manoeuvre, but the war is not providing the Turkish government with the vote-winning victory that they crave. PKK counterattacks are inflicting casualties and destroying military equipment. War also puts a large financial toll on Turkey's beleaguered economy. It has been calculated that overall, and including the consequent reduction in income from international investment, Turkey's 40-year war against the Kurds has cost the country trillions of dollars. But the CHP and E party, and all parties in the main opposition bloc, are supportive of the war against the Kurds and unlikely to challenge this expenditure. Turkey's attacks on the PKK are being aided by the Kurdistan Democratic Party, the KDP, which dominates the Kurdistan regional government. The KDP is not anti-Kurd, but they have tied their own political fortunes to the Turkish state, and they also give no quarter to anyone on the political left. Generally, the KDP avoids direct confrontations with the PKK, as they don't like to be seen fighting other Kurds. But on Monday, a group of five PKK guerrillas were attacked by a Turkish reconnaissance aircraft, killing three and injuring the other two. Shortly afterwards, KDP forces arrived on the scene, and the two injured guerrillas have not been seen since. The PKK are concerned that this was a coordinated attack, and they have demanded the return of their fighters. The Kurdistan region of Iraq's patriarchal system thrives on limiting women's rights and also the rights of the LGBT plus community. A new bill being put to the Kurdistan Regional Parliament with cross-party support plans to criminalise homosexual activity and all promotion of LGBT plus issues. Its targets will include politicians who support LGBT plus rights and journalists who write about them. This prejudice is backed up with reference to traditional Islamic morality, as are the even more draconian rules against homosexuality in Iran. Iran's Hengor Human Rights Organization reports that LGBT activists Zahra Siddiqis Hamadani, age 31, and Elham Chubda, age 24, were sentenced to death by the Revolutionary Court of Urmia for corruption on earth through promoting homosexuality. Hengor notes that Hamadani, who was arrested on her way to Turkey, was not allowed access to a lawyer. ISIS has created the epitome of a regime built on hate. This week, the security services of the Autonomous Administration of North and East Syria have been continuing their sweep of the vast Al-Hol detention camp, which houses people suspected of ISIS sympathies. Many of the camp inmates are determined to organise life there according to ISIS rules, and the administration simply does not have the resources to contain them. This security sweep has uncovered more examples of ISIS brutality. The security officers discovered a Yazidi girl, still only 18, who was captured and sold as a sex slave when she was a child and passed on from one ISIS fighter to another. When she came to Al-Hol, her ISIS husband was imprisoned and she was left with his other wives. The sweep found four women in chains with marks of torture and classrooms where another generation were being taught to hate everyone who doesn't share their particular form of fascism. Searching the camp is dangerous work. Two SDF fighters who were supporting the operation were killed when they uncovered an ISIS cell of two women and five men disguised in women's clothes. One of the ISIS men was also killed as he attempted to escape. The security sweep has also captured two Iraqis who have talked about special guest houses for ISIS in Turkey and ISIS fighters being treated in Turkish hospitals. The Turkish government's prejudices can align comfortably with ISIS, especially when it comes to hatred of the Kurds. Despite all the evidence of Turkish support for ISIS, Erdogan continues to claim that Turkey is the only country that is providing ISIS with serious opposition. On Thursday, he announced the capture of a leading ISIS figure. The SDF claims that the captured man had been under Turkish protection and that Erdogan was afraid that he would be assassinated like the previous ISIS leaders, who were found on Turkish-occupied land. Although ISIS has carried out unspeakable cruelties, it is far from unique in building power through hate. And ISIS figures who are driven through hate to do evil things are not intrinsically evil. But if we are to counter the forces currently controlling our world, we need to be aware of how these forces use hate to consolidate their power and to divide those who oppose them.